So how do we want to start?
Welcome.
Is this for a little jingle?
Let's do some recording.
Dum, dum. Yeah, this is pretty interesting, isn't it?
With the aim assess.
Yeah, this is pretty interesting.
Test 1, 2.
Aim assess.
3.
An hour episode.
But get ready for some knowledge, everyone.
I like how the first sentence of the script says, "Welcome back to Catch Up with Aim Assess." Open parentheses. Noise. Close.
Noise. That's still like... I didn't know. I couldn't remember what you'd put in. So.
Oh, you mean out the? Yeah. Wait. Play it now.
Wow.
Go.
Wow.
It shouldn't be the Owen Wilson wow. It's like the anime wow.
Yeah.
We'll put both in.
Wow.
Yeah. There's so many wows.
We actually have Owen Wilson right here with us now. He's Owen. Say something.
Step aside, Gigantor. We got us a railroad to build. We're blowing a hole in that thing.
Wow.
Very insightful.
Wow.
Okay. Well, speaking of wow, our podcast today is, episode today is...
On World of Warcraft.
Wow.
Thanks for that. welcome back.
Welcome back. Hi, Satch.
How you doing?
I'm all right. My joints are really sore.
Oh, lots of climbing?
Yeah. Sometimes I think I might have rheumatoid arthritis, but... It's the pips.
I'm looking now. Yeah.
It's on the pips. It highly swollen.
Is.
Really stiff in the morning.
Wait. Gets and better it's not with on movement. The dips?
It's not on the dips. Dip sparing.
What about your wrists?
My wrists are... Actually, my wrist is quite sore, but that's irrespective.
Oh, my God.
I've got a TFCC. Anyway. Welcome back. What do we have here? First, we'll catch up. We're going to catch up. That's what we're doing now.
Well, okay, we've also been catching up for like the last hour, but yes.
So we're first going to catch up. And then we have Ed Corner. Ooh, Ed Corner.
Woo.
On abnormal uterine bleeding. AUB.
AUB. Perfect for the second years. Perfect for the fifth years. Also perfect for everyone, but yeah, specifically. But
specifically 2-5.
2-5.
Equals 7 for you guys playing at home. What's coming up this week? Busy week. We talked about it last week, but let's recap.
Mm-hmm.
Think about what's coming on.
Yeah, so we've got Health and Wellbeing Week. Huge week, but make sure to... Good reminder to make sure you're looking after yourself. I mean, the big week is there, but you go to the things that you're interested in. The girls have put in a lot of hard work for it, but really it's to make sure, especially at this time of year when, you know, you're getting to that awkward third term, or second sem, mid, that time
shout
of year.
Out.
Shout out.
Shout out to mental health. Shout out to
Literally.
Looking after yourself. Shout out to the girls for putting on an amazing week. Anyway, what are the highlights? What are the highlights?
All right. Highlights are Monday. We've got yoga. We've got two different instructors. So make sure to head onto the event to have a look at that. And we've got our sixth committee meeting featuring patrons plate voting. We've talked about this being a compliment first. Make sure you're there.
Tuesday.
Sexual health workshop. We have just announced the speakers for those. All right. So our speakers are Dr. Mahesh Ratnayake, Eamon Spielhagen, and Dr. Tessa Opie.
Fantastic.
Yeah, we've got a really, really good lineup. So I can just summarize. So Dr. Ratnayake is a consultant sexual health physician at the Adelaide Sexual Health Centre. And Eamon Spielhagen is the promotions officer for Shine SA times Thorn Harbour Health.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Tessa Opie is the founder and director of In Your Skin, and she's the president of the Society of Australian Sexologists Limited.
That's lit.
Yeah, it's an incredible, beast lineup. So exciting.
Cool. And on Wednesday, we have puppies and cooking with yo-yo, like we mentioned last week.
Mm-hmm.
Thursday, the Ed Forum, once again, women in leadership, super excited for that. And then finally, Friday, like I mentioned last week, dodgeball with Dent.
Get around it,
throw the balls at their heads, make them get...
Okay. Don't
we're not,
do that.
We're not endorsing violence, we're just saying, you know, win by any means necessary.
Oh my God, no. But they're also squishy balls, so like...
Then throw hard.
All right. On to Ed Corner.
Let's go through our Ed Corner agenda. Blast it. It's going to be a bit of a longer one, but mm-hmm. I think it's going to have some really useful information. So starting off with definitions of bleeding. Second.
Then we go through the FIGO classification for abnormal uterine bleeding.
I'm going to quickly talk through the key history and key exam for abnormal uterine bleeding.
And then we'll go through some key clinical cases.
Three clinical cases, and we're going to cap it off with some principles, investigation and management principles. Jingle up. Let's go.
Let's go.
It's Ed Corner.
Nice jingle. Alrighty, so let's get into it. Our key resources today have been the queen, the prophet, Dr. Nicole Edge herself.
Absolute
congrats
queen.
On your second baby. Hope maternity leave is going well. She's an absolute legend, and young years, you'll hopefully meet her when you get to fifth year.
She's the best.
She really blessed our COVID year last year.
Oh, it was amazing. She gives such good teaching, and that's what a lot of our things have been based on today, and lots of her teaching goes off the various guidelines. So if you want to refer to where we're getting these things from, if you go to the RANSCOG guidelines, for example.
PPG guidelines as well. So it's perinatal practice guidelines and a couple textbooks as well, which we'll put in the show notes. Okay.
So we'll start off with what is menstruation? Because we've got abnormal uterine bleeding and we'll go through what that is. But I guess before we do that, we should probably talk about what menstruation is.
Yeah. Okay. So menstruation specifically refers to bleeding that is caused by shedding of the uterine lining, so the endometrium, as part of the menstrual cycle. Okay, there are great videos explaining the menstrual cycle. You cover it in first year, you cover it in second year and onwards. But start off with Amanda on YouTube. That's always a great start.
Yeah. And I mean, just to summarize, basically, menstruation occurs when in the cycle, your body gets ready, releases an egg, but there's been no pregnancy. If there was a pregnancy, you'd normally have that release of beta HCG. but without that, because there's been no pregnancy, the corpus luteum degenerates. Now, the CL, corpus luteum, normally secretes estrogen and progesterone. And so when those aren't being secreted, you end up getting a cascade of events, which you can have a read of. The ultimate conclusion from that is that you have myometrial contraction. So the myometrium in the uterus will contract, and you also get ischemia of that inner lining, the endometrium. Those together cause shedding of the lining and then your bleeding that you get during the cycle.
Correct. All right.
Correct.
So what is normal menstruation? I guess that's kind of
a very
general term, but
I just totally did those inverted comma things to the mic, as if you can all see.
There's actually high tech mics. There's cameras on them. Anyway,
they normally go for 3 to 7 days, and a full cycle is approximately 21 to 35 days. So you can see there the range is quite big. Lots of variation. Important to listen to your patient and see what's normal for them.
Yeah, and obviously, like, every patient is very different here. Satch, I see there's a prompt in here for me to ask you, do you know how much blood you lose? Or is it you? Everyone loses?
Huh?
How much blood do you lose?
No, that's not specific to me. That's how much do women normally lose in menstruation? It's about 35 mils.
You didn't write that.
Which is cooked because most people will say that it feels like you lose a litre, so it's a bit cooked. But anyway.
Yeah, so we're going with that. We're going 35 mils is about normal. I guess the really important thing to realise is that we diagnose AUB by the patient's subjective findings and what they tell you. So if they say that it's abnormal for them, it's abnormal, and they have abnormal uterine bleeding, and we treat it as such.
Yeah, like, you got to treat the patient, and especially in this circumstance. So if it's normal to have uterine bleeding, what is abnormal uterine bleeding?
Yeah, so it's an umbrella term. It refers to any bleeding that happens outside of the normal cycle, whether this is to do with the volume, the timing, the regularity, the duration, or whether you have bleeding, for example, between periods or after sex. Like, anything that's abnormal, literally anything that's abnormal for that woman, is considered abnormal uterine bleeding. It's in the name.
Yeah, and I guess this is an umbrella term. So abnormal uterine bleeding, it has so many different causes. And we were going through what's called the FIGO classification, which goes through some of those causes. But I guess before we do that, I just wanted to go through some definitions because they get referred to a lot when you're looking at these cases and looking at resources. And under abnormal uterine bleeding, you have a lot more smaller umbrellas of heavy menstrual bleeding, intermenstrual bleeding, postmenopausal, oligomenorrhea. So it's good to go through these. And I think the big one, especially that will come up a lot today, is heavy menstrual bleeding. That used to be referred to as menorrhagia, but that is actually an old term now. But essentially it means excessive menstrual bleeding. And that bleeding affects quality of your physical, social, or emotional life. You'll see so many different places talk about flow and how many pads are used and things like that to see whether it's heavy. But now the most updated definition is very patient focused, which is really good. And that is that, as we said, it's if the patient feels it's heavy, it is heavy. So it's really, really important to ask about quality of life and how this is affecting the patient. You can also still ask about quantifying the periods and asking how many pads there are and things like that, because that can be helpful for management and just getting a better idea. But it is about what the patient's experiencing.
Thank you for that, Sach. Going through the rest of it, we have intermenstrual bleeding, which is talking about bleeding between your normal periods. Mm-hmm. Next, we have postmenopausal bleeding. This refers to bleeding after menopause. So what's menopause? Well, it's a retrospective definition. That is, a woman has gone through menopause when they haven't had a period for 12 months in a row. And so postmenopausal bleeding is bleeding that a woman will experience after occurring these 12 months or a full year without a menstrual cycle.
Yeah. Great. And then you've got oligomenorrhea, and that's having only a few periods. Usually it's greater than 5 weeks apart, but less than 6 months duration in terms of the time between cycles. Mm-hmm. And amenorrhea is the absence of a period. You've got primary and secondary, but essentially it's not having a period. So I guess we should go through the FIGO classification because we brought it up quite a few times.
Yeah. So there are a trillion ways to classify AUB, and you go through a whole bunch of different classification systems. But one that comes up a lot and comes up in fifth year especially is the FIGO classification, which is the acronym PALM-COHEN.
So wait, what is FIGO?
I believe it stands for Federation Internationale of Gynecology and Obstetrics.
Stop, stop, stop. You're saying it all wrong. It's international, not internationale.
Je ne sais pas. Je ne comprends pas.
Je ne comprends pas. All right. Anyways.
So, like we're saying, PALM-COHEN. So, PALM of PALM-COHEN stands, is an acronym for your structural causes. So that's PALM. And mm-hmm. then we have COHEN that covers your non-structural causes of AUB, which is COEIN.
Yep. So, let's briefly go through what each letter stands for and some salient points for each.
Starting with P. So P for palm, jokes, P for polyps, specifically endometrial polyps. So they cause heavy bleeding, but if they're super big, your body can think it's a foreign object in there and your uterus can contract to try and get it out. And this is what causes pain with polyps. So for polyps, you refer to gynecologists.
Yeah, great. A is for adenomyosis. And I guess for this one, if you think about your uterus, there's three layers: endometrium, myometrium, and I think perimetrium.
Serosa. Yep.
Yep. Outer layer, basically. Adenomyosis is when that inner endometrial lining grows into that middle myometrial lining. So because of that, when you have your contractions of the myometrium, you end up getting really painful and heavy periods.
Nice. L in palm is for leiomyoma, which is fibroids, another name for fibroids. And these are usually benign, overgrowths of the myometrium, which stretches out the spiral arteries. So instead of being swirly so that they occlude better, they'll be straight. Mm-hmm. And your normal hemostatic mechanism is prevented, leading to heavy bleeding. And so if you think about, usually when you have those spring or spiral arteries, you have contraction, they stop the blood flow. Mm-hmm. But if they're stretched out, you can't stop that blood flow with contraction. You keep having extra bleeding. So there's different types of this, and the best way to learn it is to look it up on Google.
Yeah. M of palm is for malignancy and hyperplasia. So here you have a dysfunctional thick endometrium, and this is especially important in postmenopausal bleeding.
All right. onto the non-structural causes now. So we start with C for coagulopathy. The most common one you'll see with coagulopathies is von Willebrand's disease, whereby you don't have the complete clotting pathways, so you get heavy bleeding. This is more typical to see in someone who's just started having their periods, for example.
Yeah, great. And O is for ovulatory dysfunction. This is the most common cause of abnormal uterine bleeding. So very, very important. It can be ovulatory or anovulatory. So make sure you look up these causes. We obviously don't have time to go through all of them, but we will be getting to it later in the podcast as well. Key causes of ovulatory ones are PCOS or polycystic ovary syndrome, hypothyroidism, mental stress and overexercise, etc.
Mm-hmm. The E in Palm Cohen stands for endometrial dysfunction, and this is kind of a catch-all term, but usually we think about things like infection of the endometrium from an STI like chlamydia or gonorrhea.
Yeah, great. And iatrogenic is the I in Cohen. This can be through medications. An example of this is breakthrough bleeding from the pill.
Yeah, or someone might have anticoagulants, for example.
Yeah.
And finally, N is the catch-all basket for not yet classified. So everything else goes into N, which we won't cover today.
Yeah.
So many causes here, but this shows that there is a broad differential list for abnormal uterine bleeding to consider. And this is where the history and then further on exam investigations become very important.
Yeah, great. So I guess other than the usual history taking, in an obs and gynae history, you want to ensure that you're taking a good menstrual history, sexual history, and obstetric history, and, you know, a social history as well, because that can add to your picture. So to briefly go through important points in a menstrual history, make sure you're asking about, you know, that last menstrual period, how many days they bleed for, how long cycles are for, you know, heaviness, clots, flooding, and extra things that you can ask about here are pain, other symptoms like mood changes, bleeding in between periods, post-coital bleeding. And so there's lots of things that you can ask here that are really important. Do you want to go through the obstetric history stuff?
Yeah. So just to cover what obstetric means again. Mm-hmm. So obstetrics talking about anything to do with getting pregnant and then delivering a baby, while gynecology is everything else in this sphere. So for the obstetric history, the simple thing to do is to ask, do you have any children? How many times have you been pregnant? How many times have you given birth? Whether there's been any terminations or loss of pregnancies, and very important as well, have there been any complications during pregnancy? And do you know if you have a family history of complications during pregnancy?
Yeah, great. And onto sexual history. You want to take this as per usual. I think we have gone through it in one of our other podcast episodes, but to summarize, essentially, are you sexually active? How many sexual partners do you have, male, female, or both? What practices? And key things in this as well are to ensure you're asking about contraception, if they're on any medications for that as well, STI screening, and whether they've had any STIs before, as well as their last cervical screening test.
Mm-hmm. And then quickly to finish off the history, we also want to ask about the social history and the past medical history. Yeah. So the social history can tell you a lot about how this is impacting their life, as well as give you maybe some risk factors here and there. Past medical history can suggest any risk factors for endometrial cancer and hyperplasia. So Sach, can you give me some examples of what these risk factors might include?
Yeah, so I guess it's anything that can increase a woman's exposure to estrogen in their life. So the common ones that you'll hear about are, you know, early menarche or late menopause. So, you know, having that first menstrual period early. Yep. And other things are drugs like tamoxifen, unopposed estrogen while you do have a uterus so that it's affecting the endometrial lining, nulliparity, which means not having any pregnancies or, not giving birth to any babies. And I guess other things that are important to consider and very easily forgotten are medical conditions. And so polycystic ovarian syndrome, obesity, type 2 diabetes, liver disease, they all can increase your estrogen exposure usually through peripheral conversion pathways and things like that. But very important because they're very commonly in patients. And family history can also increase your risk as well.
Nice. And the last thing to do is to ask questions about complications that the patient might be experiencing, like anemia from that blood loss. Okay.
Yeah, great. So there's other things that you should do in terms of examination, but we wanted to make sure that we say that you never forget abdominal exam, because if you're going to go through and do a gynae exam, you want to make sure the patient's feeling comfortable, and it's a good way to start that examination. Then you don't want to forget a bimanual vaginal exam and a with the speculum. So yeah. That was key learning points from Dr. Edge, is do not forget vaginal exam and speculum.
But also consent and chaperone before.
Yes, 100%.
All right, that's done. Let's go on to our clinical cases. So we have three clinical cases for you guys today. One of us is going to talk through, and then we have a few follow-up questions as well. Work along with it if you want, or just enjoy the manic writing. So I'm going to start. Patient number one, Fiona Broidel, presents to you her trusted general practitioner with some vague symptoms over the past 6 months. You and Fee are quite close. In fact, you're quite close with the whole Broidel family, being their round-the-corner GP and all. After some quality 8 out of 11 small talk with Fee Broid, you delve a bit deeper into her history. Fee describes some vague fatigue, which usually she wouldn't see you about, but it's at odds with her good sleep recently after years of quasi-insomnia. Fee says that those calm TM meditation casts really do work. You think silently that it's a CPAP machine that you prescribed for her raging sleep apnea, but you both agree to disagree. Anywho, after examining Fee, you know some pallor in her creases and conjunctivae. Must be anemia. Being the astute GP you are and knowing this is a podcast on AUB, you casually ask about Fee's recent menstrual history. Funny you ask, Doc. I've actually had some heavier bleeding recently, about the past 4 periods or so. No. No pain, just heavy bleeding. Actually, the last one has some clots. Okay. Satch, everything seemed reasonably normal on exam. So you examined her and everything mm-hmm. seemed normal to you as a mm-hmm. GP. What investigation do you think would be best?
Well, I'd always want to start with a pregnancy test, because you can do that bedside. So no matter what abnormal uterine bleeding you have, you want to make sure we do that. And then an ultrasound of some kind. It sounds suspiciously fibroidal, irrespective of, you know, Fee Broid's name.
Yeah, it's coincidence.
Complete coincidence. So I guess, like, in terms of the ultrasound, it'd probably be useful to do a transvaginal ultrasound, because that's the gold standard. But, you know, it's really up to the patient, and, like, a pelvic ultrasound is more than sufficient here. I guess also because she's tired, it would also be important to do bloods for a CBE and do iron studies as well.
Nice one.
Yeah.
How would you manage Fee in the first instance, especially as a GP? Like, what are your priorities first up?
It's not really necessary at this point to rush every fibroid to the ED. But in the first instance, I guess we want to focus on symptom management. So, you know, investigations, as we talked about, and treating the likely iron deficiency anemia that she's got from the blood loss and the heavy periods. So the next, you know, depending on how large the fibroids are, where they're located, and then how severe her symptoms are on further history, I guess that would sort of guide whether you'd want to take a conservative approach and watch and wait, or refer to a gynecologist for further review and consideration of surgery and things like that.
Okay, cool. Are there any medications you can give her?
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Abnormal uterine bleeding, dysmenorrhea in general responds to, like, a number of medications. So NSAIDs, tranexamic acid, and as well as hormonal treatments that target that GnRH pathway, and a variety of contraception choices like the OCP are also great. As a GP, if you weren't feeling comfortable, or if you weren't trained in the particular area for prescribing medications in this scenario, then referral is probably your best call.
Nice. All right. So to summarize, fibroids is the most common structural cause mm-hmm. of AUB. They can cause iron deficiency anemia, as we're seeing in this case. So you start with a pregnancy test for investigation, and then consider pelvic ultrasound or maybe a transvaginal. Treat the anemia, and then depending on how bad the fibroids are and how they're affecting the patient, consider either conservative management or referral for consideration of surgery. Boom, yeah. Boom.
And then another point as well with management of heavy uterine bleeding is marinas are first line for a lot of things. Everyone loves them. And Dr. Edge puts a halo above the marinas in Hall of Fame lectures.
It's also got a cool name. Yeah. All right, case two.
All right. Penelope Cosgrove is a 25-year-old young lady. She presents to you, her GP, for abnormal uterine bleeding. You remark at how impressed you are that she knows the official terminology, where most of the patients just talk about their periods becoming unusual. Penelope gives a quick blush. She's just started medical school as a grad student and is trying to keep up to date.
Plug, sponsor us up to date.
You quickly reminisce about the old days of undergraduate medical programs. Penelope rudely says, "Okay, boomer," despite you being a millennial, and spits the letters MBBS like toxic venom. After a short silence, you awkwardly say, "Anywho," and ask her to recall what's been going on. "Well, doc, it's weird. My period has become really, really irregular, and when I do bleed, it's been either less or more than usual. This has been going on for about a year now, I think. I don't have any pain, just weird periods." "Tell me more about your symptoms," you say. "Well, doc, I've also started to get some bad acne again, but I'm not sure if that's related." The rest of Penn's history is reasonably unremarkable. She's coping well with med school.
Okay.
So, wait. Does this sound like a structural or non-structural cause of AUB?
Given the very limited history, it's hard to say definitively, but the irregular periods makes it sound more like an ovulatory cause than anything else.
Yeah.
So that's non-structural.
Yeah. So what do you mean by that?
Yeah. Okay. So with ovulatory dysfunction, the mechanism of bleeding is a little bit different to what you see in normal menstruation. Instead of shedding the endometrial lining when the hormones tell you to, the endometrium just keeps growing and growing until the arteries can't keep up with it. When this happens, it dies and sloughs off from the lack of blood supply. The key thing here is that this happens irregularly and definitely not in line with what we might expect in a typical cycle, and not in line with what the woman usually experiences on a monthly basis.
Right. So if it is an ovulatory cause, what's a common one you'd want to consider?
Definitely PCOS, PCOS, which is polycystic ovarian syndrome. First of all, PCOS is very common and very undiagnosed in the community, so it's important to think about. Second up, Penelope is reporting classic symptom worsening acne, which is a product of that hyperandrogenism, which is a hallmark of PCOS. And thirdly, just her age as well. So we expect PCOS in like the 15 to 35-year-old age group typically on a first presentation.
Yeah, yeah, great. So I guess you talked about that hyperandrogenism. How do we diagnose PCOS?
Yeah, so we used the Rotterdam criteria, Rotterdam being a city in the Netherlands, I believe. And we're looking for two of three of the following. So two or three of either one, oligo or amenorrhea, which sounds like she could have here. Two, biological or biochemical evidence of hyperandrogenism. So for example, she's got acne. She might also have like hirsutism, so where you get abnormal growth of hair. And you can also test levels of this with investigations. And three, polycystic ovaries diagnosed on ultrasound. So just to recap, two of three of either changing periods, hyperandrogenism or polycystic ovaries on ultrasound.
And the important one there as well is that if they've got clinical evidence of hyperandrogenism as well as oligo or amenorrhea, you don't even need the ultrasound findings for that diagnosis.
Nope.
So we're not going to cover investigations and management here, but I guess the summary points in this scenario from things that you've said.
So one, PCOS is very common. Two, ovulatory dysfunction is the commonest cause of AUB. Therefore, PCOS is a very common cause of AUB in general. And three, you diagnose PCOS via a constellation of symptoms, signs, and investigations via the Rotterdam criteria.
Great. So, on to the next case.
Yep, let's do it. So, Ruth Terris, which is supposed to mean uterus.
Oh my God.
Ruth Terris is a 65-year-old woman who has come to you because she's extremely annoyed that her periods have started back up again. "I thought I was done with this, doc. What was the point of all those hot flushes and feeling terrible all the time and having an increased fracture risk all the time?" You get momentarily distracted because you're impressed with Ruth's knowledge of the increased osteoporosis risk after menopause. But then you remember that you're being a dickhead and not listening, so you snap back into zone and listen. I don't get it. My periods ended 2 years ago, but for the last few months I've had this weird spotting and I feel like I can never tell if I'm going to start having a period or not. She's also very helpfully telling you her past medical history without even asking, and even says, Doc, my diabetes management has been going really well. You take the rest of the history, do an abdominal, vaginal, and speculum exam like Dr. Nicole Edge taught you, and order an ultrasound after consent and chaperone. All right, so Chini, what's going on here?
Well, I think this is a classic case of postmenopausal bleeding because it's been over 12 months since her last period.
2 years, in fact.
Yes, in fact, exactly. Okay.
Good definitions, pulling out those FIGO definitions here. Yeah. What are some differentials to consider then in a postmenopausal bleed?
Yeah, so a really common one is atrophic vaginitis, common in postmenopausal women. And what happens here is your hormones, estrogen, progesterone, normally help prevent that vaginal dryness. And without those there, it can cause irritation, especially, you know, post-coital bleeding as well. But in any postmenopausal woman, especially with risk factors, so she has got diabetes as well,
mm-hmm.
it's very, very important to consider endometrial cancer as a differential. And you don't want to be leaving without thinking about that as a differential. So I guess other ones could be things like cervical cancer, probably would be presenting with, you know, that post-coital bleeding, which could be there as well. But it's important to ask when her last cervical screening test was and then, you know, go from there.
Yeah, definitely. So we talked about the ultrasound before. So you do an ultrasound, but what do you do after the ultrasound, despite what you find?
Well, overall, because of that endometrial cancer differential, you're probably going to be doing more investigations. And so it's important to chat and, you know, discuss what's going on with your management plan, educate them, because, you know, that will be what can help decrease that anxiety for the patient rather than leaving lots of questions unanswered.
Mm-hmm.
The important find, I guess, you know, with that ultrasound, the finding that you're looking for is endometrial thickness. So in a premenopausal woman, that's looking at something like a thickness greater than 14 millimeters. But in postmenopausal, the cutoffs are much lower. They can vary a little bit and you need to take risk factors into consideration. Other investigations that you can consider, like hysteroscopy and endometrial biopsy after referring to gynae, are things that you would look at if they've got the following three things. So risk factors for endometrial hyperplasia. And so those were your increased estrogen exposure factors, as well as that past medical history, like obesity, type 2 diabetes, things like that. Two, a thickened lining on the ultrasound. And three, ongoing bleeding, especially if, you know, you've tried management and it's not working as well. So you take all of those into consideration when you're looking at whether you're going to refer to gynae and do those investigations.
So to summarize, postmenopausal bleeding, very worried about endometrial cancer. And so we're going to do an ultrasound on everyone. And since Ruth has risk factors, we're probably going to refer her to a gynecologist anyway. Yeah. And that gynecologist is probably going to do a hysteroscopy and an endometrial biopsy just to make sure that she doesn't have cancer.
Yeah. Great.
Done.
Those are the cases. I guess we just wanted to summarize some of the management principles that we didn't end up covering, I guess. And as you saw, the management sort of depends on the cause. If you've got an unstable patient, obviously what you need to do is stabilize that patient. So that's with a primary survey where you resuscitate them, make sure they're hemodynamically stable. And there's certain principles that you can use for vaginal bleeding in particular, like packing, which is akin to holding pressure to a wound pretty much, IV tranexamic acid, which works to decrease that blood flow, and embolization, which, you know, isn't really ideal.
Yeah, but you're working up that pathway and, you know, that's treated by like an ED team most commonly in resus. So for chronic situations of AUB, and especially if the bleeding is heavy, we want to decrease the bleeding. And so there's a number of ways to do this. So for example, we can use progesterones like the Mirena, which is incredible. But we can also use synthetic progesterones like the POP. Consider using the COCP. And then we also think about transexamic acid and NSAIDs like we mentioned before.
Yeah. And the COCP is just that combined oral contraceptive pill.
Yeah, that's the pill that most patients will have.
Yeah.
If bleeding is heavy, also check the iron and replace with supplementation.
Yeah. And then as we mentioned, condition-specific things, and those are, you know, what you, it's important to refer to the guidelines and have a look at what's best evidence-based as well and treat the patient accordingly.
All right. So that wraps up AUB.
Yep.
Hope you guys got something out of it.
Wraps up a fat ed corner. I guess thanks for joining us today. And thank you, as always, to our major sponsors, Mega Perks and AMA, for your ongoing support.
Peace out, Brussels
sprout. Bye.